Appaloosa Radio is proud to offer City of 4,000 Spies, Episode 1, The Mineral of Information.
The visitor's device signaled for a taxi. Within seconds, Juan arrives at the curb, loads his luggage, and assists him into a seat. On Lel, as on most worlds, the automated taxi drivers can have any personality the user chooses. The visitor had pre-selected classic New York style.
First time to Lel? Wonderful place.
Yeah. Buddy, you'll love it. Lel is a very posh resort city where you can get anything. Of course, buddy, that's dependent if you have the cash. Always about the cash. You know what I mean. Yeah. Makes the world turn, you know what I mean, buddy.
Lel?
Yeah. Sure thing. Every recreational opportunity, drug, potion, or experience is just a click away, efficiently delivered to your luxury suite and, of course, charged directly to your account. Yeah. Nothing here is ever cheap or tawdry. You know what I mean. Everything very finest quality.
Yeah.
Sure. No compromises.
Yeah.
Very superior level. Very superior level. Well, we're here. Buddy, that'll be $7.50. Enjoy your stay.
It was not his first time visiting the city by the lake. Indeed, he had been coming to Lel ever since he began his career as a professional spy, some many assignments ago. But, this time, it served his purpose, to appear to be a first-time visitor, a wide-eyed provincial from the distant, rural sectors. He even chose a cover name that aptly expressed his new identity. His identity device now gave his name as Bruce Jess Bumpkin, a purveyor of exotic materials, traveling from a sector of no military or economic value. A nobody from a nowhere place. On many previous trips, he had been easily recognizable as Dosko Verko, the second son of the 19th great nobleman of Sasko. His arrival was always a media event. He wore the latest, very flashy, high-end fashion. He was nearly always accompanied by a bevy of beautiful females. He moved in the nuanced way that spies moved. He was frequently seen at the gaming tables, wagering many hundreds of thousands. However, this time he was not coming to Lel as probably its most noticeable spy. No, this time he came to the lovely city by the lake as a bumpkin, truly named Bumpkin. It was a Rurko joke. One typical of his unique humor. One that only he could appreciate. He knew that the old English word bumpkin came originally from the old Dutch language, where the word bum meant one's rear end. So Bumpkin implied someone who was from the very most anal of realms. In its later English derivation, it came to mean one who was a block of wood. So, Dusko Rurko was coming to Lel as a bumpkin, a block of wood, from the very most anal of regions. A Rurko joke. One that only he understood.
Excuse me, sir, is this the Crown Sovereign Hotel?
That's what the sign says. Can't you read what it says?
Here's the paper they gave me. You can see it says Crown Sovereign Hotel. That is where I have accommodations.
Look, buddy. This is a very expensive location. Judging from how you are dressed, I doubt that you can afford it.
My company is paying for it, not out of my pocket.
Well, then, sir, allow me to extend a welcome to the Crown Sovereign Hotel. I'll get the door for you. Enjoy your stay.
Ruriko smiled. The guys had worked on the hotel doorman, an individual who knew Ruriko well. This was the hotel that Ruriko always stayed at. As he walked into the hotel, Ruriko, as Bumpkin, forgot to tip the doorman, generating a silent curse, and, also, marking Bumpkin as one of the doorman's least favorite hotel guests. He changed his gait, altered his voice, applied a most distinct face, dressed in ways he would never dress, became someone he was not, or more specifically, someone he had not been before. Now, it was utterly necessary to completely become who he appeared to be. Inhabit the character. Become him. Lose your previous self. Become him. Inside the hotel, Bruised Jess Bumpkin, the purveyor of exotic materials, carries his own luggage into the hyperlifts and, then, down the hallway to his designated room, wholly ignoring the automated luggage transport system. Other guests thought him strange. All one had to do was push a single button on your room identifier and everything was done for you. No need to carry luggage. Only a true Bumpkin would do such a thing. Again. The guys was working, just as it had been intended.
Welcome to all of you. For the next 2 hours, sit back and relax on our special boat tour through the remarkable Lake of Many Colors. The city of Lel lies on the remarkable Lake of Many Colors, where 100 million fragments merge and remerge into billions and billions of patterns. One can spend multiple lifetimes watching its fantastic, ever-swirling waves and never, not even once, see a representation repeated. Enjoy your afternoon on our magnificent lake.
One comes to Lel to watch the lake. No, Lel is an international city where guests from a million different sectors are fully welcomed, as long as their cash holds out. It is where one comes to mine the most precious mineral of all, the mineral of information. They say that the resort city of Lel has over 4,000 spies. That's not counting the taxi drivers, the hotel staff, the far cart dealers in the casino, the uni barkeepers, the Antonine fortune tellers, and the ever-present Coopsie girls. Any one of whom will gladly gather whatever information that is requested, for a sizable tip. Lel is where information is acquired, bartered, stolen, resold, confirmed, and falsified. Rumors, rumors about rumors, and the possibility of even more rumors fill the luxury suites with spies of every shape, size, language family, and quadrant of origin. noble son, Deskarako, how shall I prepare you for your mission?
This mission is different, PNB7Q. I will not be going to Lel to gather information. No, the purpose of this trip is for me to be robbed and then, in the course of the robbery, be murdered.
Noble son, I do not know how to prepare you to be robbed and murdered.
By this murder, certain information will get to certain individuals. False information, if you will.
Noble son, this mission seems to involve considerable danger. I cannot participate in a mission that will result in your death.
Of course, PNB7Q, the plan is for the character that I am playing to be murdered. I plan to escape death and be ready for additional escapades.
If I understand your request, you wish to be transformed into someone else, who, while in Lel, will be robbed and murdered. Yet, the real you will not die, but only appear to do so.
Yes, but the death must appear genuine. It will not work for me to pretend to die. It must be real.
So, the death is real, but you must recover, and you must recover as your own self. Noble son, you present a most interesting challenge.
And, also, while I am in character, I cannot remember who I really am or what the genuine purposes of the mission are. My mind must be cleaned.
Of course, that is entirely doable. It is the recovery that I worry about. How to recover a previous mind from one that has been cleansed. There have been issues.
Well, that is the plan. It involves considerable danger. Much could go wrong. Much could go wrong very quickly.
I agree completely.
No one, I do mean no one, would come to Lel simply to watch the miracle colors of the lake. Really, one comes to the city to mine the most precious mineral of all, the mineral of information. The mineral of information. Nothing is more precious. Nothing is worth less. Nothing is more sought. Nothing is so easily discarded. Lel is where information is acquired, bartered, stolen, resold, confirmed, and falsified. Rumors, rumors about rumors, and the possibility of even more rumors fill the luxury suites with spies of every shape, size, language family, and quadrant of origin. Each spy seeks the same product, the very elusive mineral of information.
The story I am sharing is about one such spy. He may have been real or simply the creation of a down-and-out writer of trashy fiction. Or, he may have been the combination of many spies from many different realms, a permutation from many sources.
Personally, I believe he was real, and like me, one who speaks the language of the long-ago Earth, where creatures communicated by using their lungs to power the vibrating strings of vocal cords, or as the ancient poets would say, through the spoken word.
Of course, creatures from thousands of other sectors find such a means of communication barbaric, wholly unsuitable for modern transactions. Yet, we who were once from Earth cling to it. Since Lel was once our colony, we required vocal language of all who come. Communicate how you will among your own kind. Here on Lel, we require spoken language. Use mechanical translators, if you must, but here, public conversations must be spoken out loud.
Rako, the second son of the 19th great nobleman of Sasko, was probably Lel's most recognizable spy. He was handsome, athletic, and ingenious. He wore flashy high-end fashion and drove a speeder that broke 1.75. He was seldom seen without a bevy of beautiful females and was often described with that old-fashioned word playboy, although no one knew what it meant. He looked the part of a spy. He moved in the nuanced way that spies moved. If you asked him, "What is your occupation?" He would smugly smile and say, "I am a spy, of course." If you would follow up with another question, "Who are you spying for?" he would again smirk, "Whoever pays me the most." However, he was already wealthy beyond imagination.
The 19th great nobleman of Sasko, Mirko's father, controlled the known deposits of MBY-23, a necessary component to the process of creating something out of what historically was regarded as nothingness. Of course, as everyone now knows, there is no nothingness. It was a fiction that resulted from not being able to see the strings and fragments of reality beyond sensory perception. When MBY-23 was discovered, the news media reported that stuff could be readily made from what was purported to be nothing. Of course, it was really making stuff, stuff that you can see, smell or touch, from other stuff that you can't perceive. Still to the news media, creating from nothing sounded more adventuresome, and, consequently, remained what everyone called the process. MBY-23 was an exceedingly valuable commodity. Not only was it functionally critical, but also its presence was highly localized. Through fortuitous action and considerable chicanery, the small kingdom of Sasko came to control the known deposits of MBY-23.
Visitors to our most beloved land, announcing His Noble Highness, the 19th Great Nobleman, native son of our sacred soil, protector from all enemies, of our most cherished, Sasko.
My beloved second son, you are approaching your manly maturity and you need to prepare for what must lie ahead. In contrast to the gigantic military complexes of the two dominant powers, the Kingdom Jeji and the Empire Shayot, our beloved Sasko is the merest of specks, a proverbial fly that could be swatted away with the merest brush of military action. My father's fathers, the great noblemen before me, have long known of our weakness. As a result, we have chosen to cast ourselves as a neutral among the great powers, selling an exactly equal amount of MBY-23 to both the Kingdom Jeji and to the Empire Shayot. If any of the powers sought conquest of our beloved Sasko, we have long warned, the available supply of MBY-23 would be destroyed, utterly eliminated forever. No longer would any power be able to convert nothingness into stuff. Our neutrality has worked. Better, all have agreed, to allow our tiny Sasko to exist. Better for us. We can continue making our enormous profits from selling the MBY-23. Tiny, yes, but ever so rich.
Hello. This is Bruised Jess Bumpkin. I'm trying to reach Charles. I have a package for him. I see. When might he return? Okay, I'll call back then. Thank you. Hello. This is Bruised Jess Bumpkin. I'm trying to reach Charles. I have a package for him. I see. When might he return? Okay, I'll call back then. Thank you. Hello. This is Bruised Jess Bumpkin. I'm trying to reach Charles. I have a package for him. I see. When might he return? Okay, I'll call back then. Thank you. Hello. This is Bruised Jess Bumpkin. I'm trying to reach Charles. I have a package for him. Oh, yes. Glad we could finally connect. I have a package for you. I have been told to hand it directly to you. Sorry. Those are my instructions. Yes. I would be glad to meet you. Can you give me directions? I'm new here. I'm not sure where Charlie's Claw Neon Bar is located. Yes. I can take a taxi. Yes. They would probably know where it is. Yes. I'll be leaving in 5 minutes.
It was utterly necessary to completely become who he appeared to be. He repeated, again and again. Inhabit the character. Become him. Lose your previous self. Become him. Become him. Charlie's Claw Neon Bar was just what Rurko had believed it would be. It was well outside the core of the city where the tourists visited. It would not be designated as tourist-friendly. The claw itself was a natural cave-like structure that had been for many eons been the domain of smugglers and the criminal underworld. The current owner, Charlie, had transformed the cave into a neon bar with extreme artificial lighting. Lighting that attempted to match the intense lights of the lake. Patterns changed constantly. Pulsating. Reverberating. Surrounding. Pulsating. 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 Bumpkin hesitantly approached the largest of the juice bars. The intense, pulsating lights had practically blinded him. He proceeded a few steps, then stopped, gained his sense of location, and then proceeded a few more steps. If his clothing had not marked him, his hesitant behavior did. He was a plum ripe for the picking.
hear me? Music is very loud. Excuse me.
What can I get you, buddy? Everything here is cash on the bar. No credit. Not for anyone.
Excuse me. I really don't want anything to drink. I'm Bruised Chess Bumpkin, a purveyor of exotic materials. I have a package that I was instructed to personally deliver to Charlie.
Charlie ain't here. Give it to me. And I'll see he gets it.
No. My instructions were specific. I was to personally deliver this package to Charlie. No one else.
Sorry, but I cannot help you. As I said, Charlie ain't here. That's Charlie. He says he is sending out a Coopsy girl to guide you back. Her name is Mona.
Urko almost laughed and fell out of character when he heard the Coopsy girl's name. Obviously, Charlie, whoever he might be, had a sense of humor. Her name was Mona, as in the famous painting, the Mona Lisa. This was a Coopsy girl who was not only beautiful, but who also carried a secret. However, he quickly recovered and focused again on inhabiting the character of Bruised Jess Bumpkin, a purveyor of exotic materials from the most forsaken provinces.
Hello, Mr. Bumpkin. I am Mona. I am Charlie's special assistant. Come with me and I'll take you to our corporate offices. It is a bit of a walk. We'll have to pass through the detectors, just to make certain that all is well.
Bumpkin followed Mona's lead. Even though he maintained his character, the parts of Urko that were not cleansed could not ignore Mona. She was exquisite, perfect in every dimension. Even though she wore business attire, her underlying sexiness was easily apparent. Perfection, he thought. Too bad she is machine-made. Finally, after what seemed like an hour's walking, they arrived at the corporate offices. Modern. Functional. Beautiful in an artificial way. This had once been the deepest recesses of the Claw Cavern, probably carved out as a refuge bunker in a time of some distant war. Now a corporate headquarters for an unspecified organization. If he had been on another kind of mission, the master spy would have wanted to know more about this mysterious corporation, hidden deep in the Claw Cavern. But not on this mission. Bumpkin could have no such questions. Bumpkin was here to make a delivery. And then return to his provincial home. He could have no lingering suspicions.
Mr. Bumpkin, please wait in this lobby. I'll check to see if Charlie is available to see you now.
If Urko had been himself, he he would have immediately recognized the danger that he was now in. The door through which he entered the lobby closed and then disappeared behind a sliding panel. There was now only one way out, through a pair of frosted glass doors that seemed to lead to a corridor. However, he could not be sure. The lighting there was extremely bright and intense. It blinded Bumpkin. He could see nothing. Nor did he smell the gas that was beginning to take the room. He knew he felt drowsy. He no longer remembered why he was there. Nonetheless, he still held tightly to the package he had been instructed to deliver. Professionals using laser knives do the job quickly. Some say that it is even without pain, but I for one, doubt that. Bruised Jess Bumpkin, the purveyor of exotic materials, was drowsy and the lights from the corridor beyond the supposed lobby were very bright. He did not see them enter. He may not have seen the laser knives. It was intense. It was quick. One slit his throat. One cut out his heart. The energy of the laser knives was so concentrated that the murder was bloodless. It cauterized the blood vessels as it cut through them. The murder took less than 10 seconds. In 10 seconds, Bruised Jess Bumpkin was a headless, heartless corpse. Slumped alone, in a room that he had been told was the lobby to Charlie's private office.
I have shredded it completely. It is not in this box. Only rocks. Stupid rocks. Nothing here. Maybe our source was lying. If he was, then...
The source never said it was in the box. He said it was on him. Use your apparatus and search him.
I've got a hit. There is an information device embedded into his left armpit.
Careful when you remove it. Don't damage it.
Got it. Looks intact.
Time to move this body. We want to make certain that it is in a place where it will be easily found. That way our source will know that we have the device.
It had been a challenge for the PNB7Q. After considerable effort, they had been able to do what Noble San Dosco Urco had requested.
Where is this? Who am I? What is going on? Where is this? Who am I? What is going on? Where is this? Who am I? What is going on?
I must exist. But, if I exist, who am I? Where am I at? What place? Where? Morgue. Must get back. Need money. Documents. Back to Sasko. Murko. Where is this? Who am I? What is going on?
What Urko did not know was that he was not yet himself. He was still a mental recording that the PNB7Q had implanted in him. It was a rudimentary consciousness, but it was sufficient for the strategy that the PNB7Q designed. The rudimentary consciousness would trigger the healing implants necessary to get Noble Son Dusko Urko back to Sasko, where his restoration and rehabilitation would be completed.
What place,
unbeknownst to Urko, the PNB7Q had dispatched a watchman to oversee Urko's status throughout the mission and to prepare him for a safe return to Sasko. The PNB7Q had selected a model that was small, about the size of a housefly, but still easily visible. The watchman would have to cover considerable distances, and had to be large enough to do so. The watchman had observed Bumpkin arrive at the hotel and had intercepted his attempts to connect with Charlie. It had even watched as Bumpkin went into Charlie's claw neon bar. Then, the watchman had identified Urko's body within minutes of its disposal. It was the watchman who notified authorities, and who watched over Urko as the body lay in the morgue. When it was safe to do so, the watchman initiated the recovery sequence for the body from the morgue. A mortuary attendant arrived at the morgue with a request from Bumpkin's family. His body was to be returned to his home province for burial among his ancestors. Once the body had been released to the mortuary attendant, it was transported to a secret clinic where the various healing implants were surgically placed into the body. The clinic was minimal, and the implants were basic, but they were sufficient to get him back to Sasko. It was in this simple clinic that the Noble Son Dusko Urko began his return to consciousness.
PNB7Q. Most Noble Son Dusko Urko. This is a message implanted in your brain by the PNB7Q. It is designed to facilitate your extraction back to Sasko. Your original instruction to us was that no one should know that you have been in Lel. Your mission was to leave no trace of your presence. For that reason, we must extract you under unusual circumstances. The wounds you sustained during the mission are substantial. We were able to surgically install various healing implants, but, unfortunately, they require time to work. If we keep you in Lel, there is the very real danger of discovery. Therefore, we must extract you while your wounds are still unhealed. Until you return to Sasko, your identity is that of an organ donation cadaver. You will have no vision, no hearing, no sense of touch. To the security agency, you will appear to be dead, sustained only insofar as your organs remain viable for harvesting. Sorry for the discomfort this endeavor brings you. The PNB7Q look forward to your full recovery and your availability for subsequent missions.
It is a necessary fact that a living organ donation cadaver cannot speak its thoughts. Nonetheless, Urko busied himself with a mental game.
A living organ donor cadaver. Obviously, a practice that has continued from the very distant past. A most gruesome practice.
However, I shall direct my thoughts elsewhere. I'm going to design a mental game, one that will preoccupy me until my rehabilitation begins. Probably a literary game. How about a game that involves the English playwright William Shakespeare? I know his works well. My nannies would often read them to me. Well, I am in this refrigerated box, posing as a cadaver. So, here are the rules to my game. 1. It must be a line from Shakespeare's plays. His sonnets will not count. 2. It must make a direct reference to death. 3. The reference must include a citation to which play the quotation comes from. That seems enough. How about?
For now they kill me with a living death.
From Richard III. Great. How about something from one of Shakespeare's comedies?
Death Counterfeiting Sleep.
From A Midsummer Night's Dream. Another?
The Gloomy Shade of Death.
From Henry VI. Probably part one. But could be wrong. Yet another?
Death lies on her like an untimely frost.
Of course that is from Romeo and Juliet.
And so, he entertained himself until he was safely home again in Sasco.